Well, 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 already that time again. Welcome to another edition of the Horsing Around podcast. I'm Andy Lindahl, your Broncos sideline reporter from the Bronco Radio Network, featured on 850 KOA and 94.1 FM here in town in Denver. And it's already time to bring you another edition of this podcast, talking a little bit of draft. Andrew Mason will break down with me and Romy Bean. Will the Broncos really consider a left tackle? Is it a must-have at 20? Will John Elway succumb to the alleged biggest need from the outside, or does he draft best player available? And who might be some other weapons that the Broncos could be considering to add, especially on the offensive side of the ball, and even a linebacker in there? So without further ado, here's another edition of the Horsing Around podcast.
Andy and I've talked a lot about, you know, will they draft a left tackle? My hope is that in the first round that they would go for a skill player, that they would go for a tight end or an all-purpose back like Christian. That's who I would really hope for. But now it's more, these mock drafts are coming out. Mel Kiper, all of them said, you know, probably a left tackle. And for me, I feel like I'm not pleased on that, because I feel like he won't be ready right away and you could miss a best player available. So I've been itching to get your take on everything.
Well, here's the thing, like Mel Kiper Jr., he had a mock draft that came out yesterday and they did a conference call with national media talking about it. And on his mock draft, he had the three guys widely considered top three tackles: Alabama's Cam Robinson, Garrett Bowles out of Utah, Ryan Ramczyk out of Wisconsin. He still had them on the board. And I have to think that if all three were on the board at 20 and the Broncos were looking at tackle, they would actually look to move down a few picks. Get some and get something extra. Maybe bolster second what you have on your set on the second day of the draft by moving down a few slots, simply because there's good depth all around. Christian McCaffrey, all the projections seem to have him going now in that, even like as high as number 8, I still think he's going to end up falling somewhere in the teens, to where if the Broncos really wanted him, they could move up and get him. I still, you know, it's interesting to kind of see the way the winds blow on these mock drafts. It's all a little bit of guesswork, quite frankly, but, you know, teams will send signals. Some are true, most are false. Everyone's trying to kind of, you know, get people off the sniff of what they're doing. So, I mean, I certainly think it's wide open. I don't necessarily think the Broncos are going to take a tackle. I think the thing that a lot of the national pundits don't understand is that John Elway wants the best player on the board, and he doesn't think as much about position as most people outside of Denver might think he does. And he thinks more in terms of, I had this guy with a top 10 grade and he's sitting there falling through the teens. Let's go get him. That's how you end up with Shane Ray. That's how you end up with Bradley Roby.
Well, and how they got Sylvester Williams in a way, because even though the two sides didn't come to an agreement on this latest contract,
right,
the Broncos were excited to get him at the time, and he was projected to go about 10 spots higher than he did.
Right, even though there was a gaping hole at that point at edge rusher, because it was in the wake of the Elvis Dumervil fax fiasco. So most pundits going into the 2013 draft had the Broncos taking an edge rusher. He had Von Miller on one side, rookie on the other. They didn't do that. The next day, Sean Phillips is in the building. The day after that, he's agreeing to terms. And they got 10 sacks out of him. I mean, that's why it wouldn't at all surprise me if the Broncos still have a vacancy at left tackle going in the draft, but then don't pick a left tackle. Because if they still have a vacancy, most people around the league may think, oh, they're going to pick left tackle. But what we know about the Broncos' history and John Elway's history drafting is he doesn't do the obvious thing quite often. He'll react to the draft board. You know, maybe they have a high grade on Reuben Foster, and because of the incident that he had at the hospital in Indianapolis during the combine where he got sent home, maybe he falls. Maybe the Broncos take him. I mean, there's any number of possibilities there beyond, I think, what a lot of people are focusing on.
Talk to us, Mace, a little bit about the tight ends in the draft, and then specifically one that you've kind of been highlighting a little bit that you think would be a good fit and that could the Broncos could possibly get.
Okay, well, O.J. Howard is the top of the class, creme de la creme, but may well go in the top 10. He's out of Alabama. Complete package. Actually had his biggest games in the last two national championship games that Alabama played against Clemson, so you know he can succeed on the big stage against high-quality competition. Lack of consistency in terms of catches and yards, but some of that is because Alabama's a fairly diverse offense. He's not going to get the ball all the time. What I like about O.J. Howard is he's as good a blocker as he is a pass catcher. He's the complete prototypical tight end. But I don't think he's going to be there at 20. Then you get in the next tier, guys. David Njoku out of Miami. Really emerged second half of last season. Didn't do a lot before then. Fits the template of a tight end. Has all the physical tools. Think he's going to go mid to late first round. But the depth is there to where the Broncos could probably get quality at tight end in round two or round three. Mel Kiper Jr. suggested Adam Shaheen, this kid out of Ashland College in Ohio, Division II, a man among boys on the film, as you'd expect from a 278-pounder who's 6'5 and can move and has agility and is very fluid, great hands. I think he's got, even though he's got the size to be a good blocker, I think he's got a little ways to go technically as a blocker, but he's gone from a guy that I thought maybe would be available in the third round because he came from a small school to one that, and I agree with Mel Kiper Jr. on this, looks like more of a second round guy at this point because of all his physical attributes and because he did very well at the combine. But then you go to other guys. I love Bucky Hodges out of Virginia Tech. I love him as a fit for the Broncos because he's the kind of chess piece that Mike McCoy likes for his offense. Even though he's 257, he's got a 4.57 40, so he can move for a big guy. He's big enough to be in line going next to the tackle, but he's agile enough and fast enough to where you can use him outside, you can use him in the slot, you can use him in the backfield. He's the kind of player you can move around, and Virginia Tech did a lot of this. You'd see him outside, you'd see him inside, you'd see him everywhere. He was a really good weapon for them, and because of his versatility, I think he's intriguing. Evan Engram out of Mississippi, he's smaller, he's 234 pounds, maybe a little closer to a big receiver than a pure tight end, but he's another guy that you can move around inside, outside. Not sure about him as a blocker, again, at 234, not necessarily the size to be a good blocker, but very effective pass catcher. And then you get beyond that, there are some sleepers. Jake Butt out of Michigan, I think he was going to go high before he tore his ACL. If you're willing to live with the rehab from the ACL in year one, he's going to be a player. Gerald Everett out of South Alabama does a lot of the same things O.J. Howard does, a little bit smaller. I'd say he's probably 95% of O.J. Howard. Watching him, and I got a glimpse at him watching him at the Senior Bowl, and he and O.J. Howard were often working back-to-back in reps, and it was interesting to see Gerald Everett out of a smaller school in the Sun Belt Conference do this, a lot of the same things and do them almost as well as O.J. Howard, so he could be good value in round three. Jordan Leggett out of Clemson, he's another guy that's going to get a lot of notice. Michael Roberts out of Toledo, he's a third-day guy, not fast, but potentially a very good blocker and the biggest hands I've ever seen. But again, you're talking about productive tight ends going into well into day three of this draft, and that's why I would be surprised the Broncos didn't come out of this draft with a tight end. Don't forget, Virgil Green's in the final year of his contract. Jury's still out on AJ Derby and Jeff Heirman.
And how important is it though to have a tight end that comes in, but specifically a blocking tight end? I feel like the Broncos have really not had that the past couple of years, and it's definitely been a void. Mm-hmm. All these guys you're talking about, do you feel like they are kind of that dual threat tight end? Because I feel like the Broncos really need to focus on the blocking aspect, because I don't feel like they've had that in the tight end category.
Well, you'd like Virgil Green to be the blocking tight end.
Right.
Ideally.
That hasn't quite panned out.
Yeah. But this offense may provide some more opportunities and better situations for him to block than perhaps the last one did. You know, AJ Derby, he's relatively new to being a tight end because he only took it up late in his college career. So you can see there's some work for him to do as a blocker. And Jeff Heirman, I mean, just the jury is out because he loses his first year's torn ACL. He has hamstring problems early in his second year, doesn't get on the field as much as you want. And I look at some of these guys in terms of the blocker. Obviously, O.J. Howard, he can do it all. And I think David Njoku is a good blocker as well.
Say that one again.
David Njoku.
Njoku. There
Njoku
we go.
From Miami.
We were trying to say that yesterday, and I just am, you know, that's one of those I'm going to need to see and say a few times. So thank you.
But like someone like Adam Shaheen at 278 pounds, obviously he needs some technical refinement as a blocker. And I just from when I watched the film of him at Ashland, I mean, you know, he's not blocking guys that are anywhere close to NFL capability in terms of defense, in terms of edge guys. So he's got a ways to go, but someone of his size and his frame should be able to figure it out at some point. Just you might have to be patient with him. He's already there as a pass catcher. Would have to figure out the blocking. It might be something that you just have to live with some struggles for year one. But he has the tools, and I think with even a guy like Evan Engram at 234. He's a willing blocker, maybe not an effective blocker. Maybe he needs to add some weight to be effective, but he's willing. And that's what I see across the board from these tight ends is a willingness to block. I even, when the occasions with Bucky Hodges is asked to block, I see a willingness to do that. And if you've got that, then in time you can at least get some capable play out of that player as a blocker. And that's key because you don't want to tip your hand with a guy when he goes on the field. If a tight end is only a pass catcher and he's out there, they're going to know, you know, 75-80% of the time he's going out for a route and they can adjust accordingly. You need guys that are as likely to block as they are to run a route.
All right, there's still plenty more to talk about. When we come back, I want to find out, because you did say you have the little piece with Mel Kiper up there.
There is a piece on DenverBroncos.com detailing who he mocked and why he mocked in the Broncos. And I actually asked him specifically about the tight ends.
When do you feel? Is it the first mock draft of the year? Is it the first mock draft after the combine? When do you really feel like you get your truest gut feel for where players are going to go before teams start trying to fill the vacuum with subterfuge, if you will?
I would actually say it's right after the combine. And believe it or not, right before free agency. I think now you are at the apex of the misdirection season. And that will continue until pretty close toward the draft. I think you'll see some of the BS get cut through a few days before the draft, and I think the accuracy will pick up the closer you get to the draft. Right now, it's just a lot of there's so much chatter, so much buzz. We're coming out of the owners' meetings. And this is also the point where kind of the rumors start taking on almost a life of their own. And as we get into the days right before the draft, things will crystallize a little bit and the focus will be there. But right now it's just there's so much chatter and not a lot of fact.
A whole lot of BS going around. Now look, again, this will fall into the same category as the player Romy wants to talk to you about, which is Christian McCaffrey. But so I watched Mel Kiper today, and he was on ESPN. And matter of fact, Todd McShay was with him, as now they're in dueling mock draft season.
Right.
But Kiper and McShay both making it sound like there's a lot of buzz about Joe Mixon. And all of a sudden, a lot of teams showing interest in Joe Mixon. Matter of fact, wasn't it the Saints yesterday that said they had a great visit with him? There was a team, I want to say it was the Saints, in a tweet that I noticed that basically said they had a great visit with him.
Mm-hmm.
Regardless, is this kid really becoming a second-round talent, or does he even slip into the first round? I know you said last week that in draft season, like you said, things can change weekly. Does anybody have the guts to take a chance on this kid in the first round?
Last thing, the talent alone is first-round worthy. It's obviously the issues. It's the fact that you have that incident caught on video, and that elicits an understandably visceral reaction in the public. It's something that you're going to have to, where you're going to have to deal with some fallout from around the nation, even from some from pockets of your own fan base. If you pick him, I would say probably the sweet spot for him is probably still on the second day. But they always, you know, the cliche, all it takes is one team.
Yeah,
and
same with Tebow, right? It's kind of a Tebow situation. Now, much different reasoning for it, But all it took was one team, ended up being this one, interested in taking Tim Tebow in the first round when nobody said it would happen.
And you, the team that takes Joe Mixon has got to, they've got to be very resolute. And the thing with, and Mixon himself is going to have to be very contrite. He's going to have to own the mistake. Now, if you hear, you hear various things about like the how the meetings have gone, how in those discussions with teams that he's kind of owned up to it and to what he did, and is really wants to make sure that he's a, that he is a changed person, that he can show that he's a changed person. But going out there and doing it and conveying that publicly is different than just meeting face to face with a coach or an executive and telling him and telling him or her that. That's, you know, and that's going to be part of the issue for him. And the other thing, quite frankly, I mean, the Joe Mixon call for a team, that's not simply going to be a GM head coach call. That's going to be an owner call. And if the owner says, I don't want this situation, and you've heard like Robert Kraft talk about how he doesn't want Joe Mixon on his team. So there are going to be some teams at the top level of their organization that say, we are not picking this guy.
Well, it's going to be something to watch. As I said, he's kind of the mover and shaker right now. Every year in the draft, it feels like there's a mover and shaker right before we get to the actual start of the proceedings that never ends up being. I'm trying to remember who it was last year. There was a kid. There were a couple kids last year I felt like got all this buzz. Everyone thought they were going to go high, and then nothing ever really materialized with it. You know, when you get the kids in the draft room that you're wondering how long is their weight going to have to be and so on and so forth. So,
well, like even Paxton Lynch, I mean, you start, once you got in the mid-teens, it was, where's Paxton Lynch going to go?
Right.
And, you know, how long, he's into the 20s. Where does the fall kind of stop? Jalen Smith out of Notre Dame, he was a guy that fell. Remember Miles Jack from UCLA had the injuries?
Yep.
Yeah, and those were guys that fell. They fell all the way in the day, too. Robert Kimdiche from Ole Miss, same thing. He was day one. He ended up going to the Cardinals late on day one.
I feel there's nothing worse, I feel, for the kids when they're sitting there and the camera just keeps panning on them, and it's just so awkward, and they're just sitting in the draft room. Uncomfortable.
That last guy in the draft room, I always feel empathy for.
Yeah, it's horrible. And then the camera's just in his face. It's not a fun situation. People want to know about Christian McCaffrey. Obviously, there's a lot of Broncos fans that would love to see him here. What do you think is going to happen with Christian?
Well, if I were guessing right now, I'd say he goes off the board somewhere in the early to mid-teens. I'll probably have another mock draft coming up at some point in the next week or two. And I think Philadelphia at 14 seems about the sweet spot for him. I have seen some mock drafts that have him going as high as number 8 to Carolina. Carolina would be interesting because they obviously want to get some weapons for Cam Newton, but when they've looked for running backs, they've looked for more traditional type guys. I mean, I think if a Leonard Fournette is sitting there at 8, I would think that would be the play for Carolina rather than a Christian McCaffrey, but we'll have to see. Philadelphia, given they've shuffled the deck in terms of their skill players, you want to get Carson Wentz another weapon. I could see that. If McCaffrey goes beyond that, I could see Washington and Tennessee being in play in the late teens as well. Tennessee to give a dose of explosiveness to an offense that beyond Marcus Mariota really doesn't have that. It's a plow horse offense at this point. And, now if Christian McCaffrey went to Tennessee, I think they'd use him more as a slot receiver and then as a running back. I think in Philadelphia and Washington, I think there'd be pretty equal use of him as a running back and a receiver. And if by chance he was a Bronco, I think it'd be pretty balanced in how they used him as well.
A follow-up, two things. Do you think what would the Broncos be willing to trade up to possibly get him? And if not, who else in this draft is kind of an all-purpose back that you think could fit that kind of role, which the Broncos do kind of need?
Well, I could see Curtis Samuel out of Ohio State being a guy who maybe is, you could almost say, is a poor man's Christian McCaffrey. And he looks to be a day two guy at this point. Not the same vision and instincts as McCaffrey, but can do some of the same things. And he's also very quick and can make some things happen in space. But I wouldn't see him as a first round pick per se.
Would McCaffrey fit with the Colts is the question. I mean, look, I don't know. Is there any team McCaffrey wouldn't fit with? Everybody would love a McCaffrey, right?
Exactly, because I use this analogy with Bucky Hodges, but McCaffrey's a chess piece and not a king or a pawn. Someone who can, he's a piece that can move around the board. He can do, you're not restricted to anything with him. I mean, you could have a game where he's outside, inside, in the backfield, punt returns, kickoff returns. You're thinking of getting him the ball, I think, 15 times a game, and you could be getting it to him in 10 different ways almost, if you count whether it's a traditional handoff, jet sweep, fly sweep, end around, bubble screen in the slot, have him going vertical. He's the kind of player and unique talent that makes an offensive coordinator drool because of the myriad methods in which you can use him, and he creates matchup problems for the defense. One of the things I come back to on Christian McCaffrey is this. There's a lot of good players in this first round, but some of these players, you see players like that every year. How often do you see a Christian McCaffrey, someone who has this sort of versatility combined with open field vision, combined with off the charts football instincts? How do we see that once every 10 years?
Yeah.
And I say, if you're in position, grab the rare talent that you can't get another time.
So then
grab it.
Why does a team not trade up to get him? Why does the Broncos not
I could see them trading up to a degree where it's feasible. Cause I know you asked about that earlier and I'm sorry. I kind of got on another tangent and didn't get to that.
Basically, you were part of our talk show.
Yeah.
This is what you do. This is what we do.
Squirrel.
They've gone up 5 picks in the 20s. They did it for Shane Ray.
Yep.
They did it for Paxton Lynch. So there's a willingness to move up. And they have the gumption to move up. But here's the thing. Mm-hmm. Moving up from 31 to 26 is different than moving up from 20 to 15. If you're going from 20 to 15, you're potentially sacrificing a second round pick. Now, what's interesting, I will be fascinated to see if there are teams that sacrifice a first round pick next year to move up this year, because this year's draft class, with the exception of offensive line and quarterback, is deep across the board. It's deeper than it's ever been, I think, at tight end. It's deep at receiver. It's deep at running back. It's deep on the defensive line. Deep at corner and safety. Quality all over the place. If you were going to sacrifice a future year's first round pick to move up, to me, this is the year to do it.
Well, it's going to be fun to watch, like you said, who's willing to move, who isn't, and how many unique talents are in this draft? Let me ask you that, because to me, Christian represents a unique talent. Mm-hmm. How many guys are like that in this draft?
At the top, I like Jonathan Allen, I think, out of Alabama, is a Pro Bowler right out of the gate.
He's the defensive end, right?
Yeah, defensive end, defensive tackle. You're going to move him around the D-line. Solomon Thomas, not as consistent as I'd like, but boy, like Solomon Thomas and Myles Garrett, the two edge guys near the top, very high ceilings. Myles Garrett, I haven't liked the pass rusher off the edge this much since Von Miller. So I would argue that's a pretty unique talent. You get down toward the middle of the mid to late portions of the first round, their talents that they have, there may be an asterisk. Like Reuben Foster, if he can get just a little bit better at diagnosing plays at the snap, he's got the quick, he can cover tight ends, he can even cover running backs, can even cover receivers from time to time, and you don't see that out of many linebackers. A true three-down linebacker can also go sideline to sideline very well. Malik McDowell, There's questions about his work ethic. There's questions about his intangibles. But when the light bulb turns on for him, the film of him is terrific. And you know, there's you're talking, you know, and Leonard Fournette.
Boy, 228, man, that changes things a little bit, right?
Yeah.
Now, I hope he stays there. I don't want him to become fat at the fat running back.
He had good numbers at 240.
He did. Well, that's why at 228, you're going, uh-oh.
He might be unstoppable.
That's AP-like all of a sudden,
yes,
isn't it?
That is. And no offense to Ezekiel Elliott, but if Leonard Fournette can stay at 228 pounds, he's the best pure running back to come along in the last 5 years. So this is a draft that's got some guys that you don't see come along on an annual basis.
Well, look, this is always it's always a fun time of year. You got to get it right. And for you, we've already talked about this. For anybody wondering why it's always best player available, I mean, you brought up some of the unique talents that could be there. Now, it's starting to look like more and more, if Mel Kiper's to be believed. It's funny because now Mel Kiper, I saw him this morning as we talked about on ESPN, and you guys had talked to him. He said for Christian McCaffrey, he's got him going to Washington, but he wants to put him higher because he does think he's that kind of talent. And he does think there's that many teams interested in him, and a lot of people seem to think Philadelphia is the spot, like you mentioned, that will ultimately take him because Doug Peterson's got plenty he can do in his offense with him.
And don't forget, and I'm going to make this connection here, where did Peterson coach before he was in Philadelphia?
With the Chiefs.
Yes. And so obviously he's still tight with a lot of people with the Chiefs, and he sees what they got out of Tyreek Hill.
Okay. Well, not only Tyreek Hill, but some people have told me Christian McCaffrey can be Jamal Charles-like for you, where he's running in the backfield.
Yeah.
And he's a problem everywhere. Kick return, punt return, the whole deal.
But exactly. But the moment, you know, when the Chiefs are out there, the moment Tyreek Hill and the Chiefs break the huddle, you're thinking, where is he?
Yep.
You've got to account for him, and that's what Christian McCaffrey can do. Even though he's not quite the same kind of player, they have different skill sets, but the versatility is the same.
So Romy and I, we kind of had this conversation this morning. I know that all the mock drafts, and I've seen plenty of mock drafts that just last week had Christian McCaffrey being the guy, and they're going to be there at 20, and everyone's changed their mind, decided he's going to go higher than that, and forget about it, and yada yada yada. So everyone's back on a tackle. I don't want to see you take a tackle because I just feel like you in particular and some of the other guys we trust, our buddy Jeff Legwell, the guys that I've talked to, they just feel like that surefire tackle isn't there. So don't pass on a good player that you're going to regret seeing in another uniform for years to come.
I would rather take a tackle in like rounds 2 to 4. Guys like Antonio Garcia of Troy, Julian Davenport out of Bucknell, athletically may have higher ceilings than these first rounders. Now, you have to accept the fact they're probably not going to be ready to go in year one, but I think in year four, year five, they could be better.
Tell you what, so I got two people I want to ask you about. Don't let me forget to ask you about the Buffs. Okay. But first and foremost, Romy and I got into this yesterday. If a Jabril Peppers happens to be there.
Ooh, wow.
What he can do. Now, look, you'd be adding to a position of strength. It'd be like when you drafted Bradley Roby, but there's a kick and punt returner again, and a guy that could at minimum take Kayvon Webster's spot. See, to me, I would even take a guy like that over a tackle you're not sure about. Because I feel like Peppers offers such a higher upside, ultimately, to what he could mean to your franchise.
And boy, oh boy, the way the Broncos like to use their safeties as well, which, you know, one of those safeties moves into the box next to Brandon Marshall or whoever is the inside, is the weak side inside linebacker. Boy, I mean, he's a defensive chess piece. I'm hitting that analogy often, but
isn't he got a little TJ Ward possibility to him ultimately?
Oh, absolutely.
Maybe not right out of the box, but he's that rover, like you said. When you say a chess piece defensively, for people that don't realize, TJ's in the secondary, TJ's up on the line, TJ's blitzing for you. I mean, TJ does a ton of stuff
and
in that
TJ,
defense.
And TJ Ward is in the last year of his contract.
So see, that would be another, to me, it would mirror the Bradley Roby pick. And though I think people at some
and
point,
I should have mentioned Jabril Peppers in the unique talents, because he is. He's not classifiable compared to the other safeties I've seen the last 3 or 4 years.
Okay, where do you think, who is the highest Buff pick, and how many, if any, get in the first round? Is it Akello?
It's going to be Awuzie.
Awuzie, thank you.
And
is he a first rounder?
I could see him sneaking into the first round. I'm hearing there's a lot of buzz good buzz internally around the league about him. I could see him being at the back end of the first round. I don't see him going any later than day two. The last mock draft I had him right there almost in the first round, and what it would mean for that program to get a first rounder.
A lot. What team do you think? What team? Because the Patriots don't have a pick anymore.
Right.
So what team maybe?
Well, New Orleans is sitting there with that 32nd pick, and they need secondary help bad. He'd be a very good fit there.
That would be, you know what? I'm sure you'd take it too.
Hey, right? He looks good in black and gold, right?
And there you have it. That is the Horse and Round podcast. Again, I'm Andy Lindahl, your Bronco sideline reporter. Romy Beans, a former Bronco cheerleader who does a talk show with me on Denver Sports 760. Catch us on the iHeartRadio app. Next week, it'll be just me and Andrew Mason as he checks in from a vacation locale as he gets a little relax time in before we really hit the grind of the NFL offseason, where we get to camp days, we get to the draft. We got a lot coming up, and Andrew's going to take a quick break, but he will check in with us from his tropical location, and there's still a ton more ahead here on the Horse Around Podcast on DenverBroncos.com.